beach quarantine. This beach is polluted with sewage and is dangerous to health. The public is excluded from swimming in these areas under order of the State Board of Health.
Listen, America. With summer just around the corner, signs like that are already going up today on beach after beach the country over. In a moment, we promise to tell you why it happens and what you can do about it. Living 1949, brought to you each week by NBC and its affiliated stations, having recently dramatized the problem of our polluted air, now reflects in its radio mirror the national abuse of our water resources, the callous poisoning of our streams and beaches in
Our Troubled Waters.
Your narrator, Ben Grauer.
Greetings, America. With the shocking facts of our story piled a mile high, we of Living 1949 pause for no opening palaver, but plunge headlong into one of the most searing quotations we've read in months. Into the words of a man who knows what he's talking about and who's talking to you.
This is a sick land. It is too young to realize it, and its body is so vast that it cannot feel its illness except as local pains. But the poison of decay is in it. Its squat and chunky torso between the Rockies and the Appalachians is festering. Its good right arm in the industrial northeast is scabrous. Its strong left arm in the Pacific Northwest is rankling. Its thighs and legs in the New South and Southwest are superating. For water is to the land as blood is to the human body. And the life streams of this nation are as poisoned arteries, poisoned by the very people they nurtured so generously.
Those are the words of Bill Wolfe, writing in the magazine Sports Afield. He's talking about the United States, yours and mine. He's talking about you, who so soon after the Pilgrims have succeeded through carelessness and indifference in making of your streams
open sewers,
rivers of sickness and death,
running sores upon the land.
Think of it. You who need clear, clean water to drink and live and thrive. You for whom life itself depends on the purity of 100,000 miles of inland streams and waterways. Maybe these scenes, based on actual corroborated facts, add up to a picture you can comprehend.
You are a repairman working on the water mains of one of New York State's largest cities. Your work is done. You're ready to turn the water on again. You ask for an all-clear signal.
Okay, Jake.
Okay on this end. Let her go.
You bend over a large valve and tug at it. And the water flows. You go home. You think your job's well done. But then, not one, but all of a sudden, 35,000 people start complaining.
The pain's here, Doctor. Here in my stomach.
Confounded, the health authorities check the water supply. Quicker than you can say gastroenteritis, the radio broadcasts the warning and the newspapers rush it into print.
Milltown, June 5th. Local residents today were warned to boil their water by local authorities. Tests by health officials have revealed that the water in the mains is polluted. It is imperative that all water be boiled.
Do you know what you did? You turned on the wrong valve. Instead of letting the purified water from the chlorination plant into the city pipes, you let in 5 million gallons of polluted water, which was supposed to go to the fire hydrant.
And the polluted water sickened 35,000 people, according to Bill Davidson, writing in Collier's. That's the condition of the raw water of our streams today. It's enough to make you sick.
You are the governor of an eastern state. It's wartime, and you've been asked by the War Department to make a few parting remarks to soldiers in your state ready to embark for Europe. You're shocked to learn.
I am shocked to learn, General, that the port of embarkation is noted here as New York City. New York City!
Yes, but Governor...
Why, General? Why, that's what I want to know. Why can't our boys leave right here from a port in their own home state?
Because, Governor, the Navy refuses to bring any more ships down the river to your port.
Well, of all the... Explain yourself, sir.
Because, one, the smell of the river is unbearable. And two, the water of the river corrodes the ship's bottom.
Don't ask whether it's fact or fiction, my friends. It's fact, as reported by Bill Davidson. Untreated sewage and industrial waste damages paint and corrodes metal and river craft, wharves, canal locks, dams, and bridges. Thus interferes with navigation and weakens our transport system.
You, back in the 1920s, are a public health official, and suddenly you discover that you have on your hands
an epidemic of typhoid fever.
And, Chief, all of these victims aren't poor folks. A lot of them are people with money, people whose living standard you'd think would keep them from being exposed.
You think about it for a long time, and finally you decide to
send out a questionnaire to all the people who have had this epidemic. Ask them what they had to eat the past 2 weeks.
Right. Out go the questionnaires. Back come the answers. And what do you learn?
You know something, Wilkins? Most of those typhoid victims have been eating Blue Point oysters.
You waste no time checking on where those oysters come from. You finally put your finger on a specific packing house. Hear from the proprietor.
Well, I tongue those oysters offshore like the law says. Only I wanted to keep them fresh, so I sunk them into a crib right here off this wharf.
Don't you know, man, the water off this wharf is polluted?
Well, no, sir.
What you did, in essence, was to feed those oysters a diet of typhoid germs and then turn them out for sale to kill 150 people.
Today, our waters are checked to make sure that their fish products, be they oysters, clams, or what have you, are fit to eat before the fish are sold. You're safer. But in the process of making you so, thousands of acres of once productive waters have been placed out of bounds, barred to fishing because the polluted water will only produce contaminated fish. Indeed, stream after stream is so dirty, even the fish can't live in them.
But to go on.
The city heat is sweltering. The only thing you can think of is a dip, a refreshing swim in cool, clean water. You reach for the phone and call your girlfriend.
Hello?
Millie?
Yeah, what, Cook? I'm expiring from the heat.
How about going down the beach for a swim?
Gee, if we only could, but it's against the law.
Against the law?
Don't you ever read the papers? The beach is polluted.
Well, how about the lake?
Same thing.
Polluted?
Polluted.
Well, I'm dying.
Me too.
Well, what are we going to do?
Tell you what.
What?
Let's go to the movies.
The pictures polluted, but at least the place is air-cooled. There you are, America. There are just a few examples of the menace of water pollution that daily is eating away at the health, happiness, and prosperity of the nation. Why? How come? What causes it?
Pollution is born of two main causes.
Yes, sir.
First, municipal sewage. The wastes of the people who populate our cities. Some coastal cities actually empty this sewage raw a few miles offshore. 9,000 towns with over 6 million inhabitants need complete new sewage systems. And over 100 cities with over 80 million inhabitants have systems which need drastic improvements.
And the second cause?
Industrial pollution. Waste from factories, mills, mining, canning, dairying, brewing, etc.
Which is worse, friend?
Industrial pollution chiefly destroys fish life, property, and property values, and creates a visible and obnoxious condition through its pollution. Municipal pollution does all these, and seriously affects the national health as well.
Here, then, America, is our problem and its causes. A problem as old as the settling of the continent, a problem as old as cities and industries are new. Hand in hand, all of us together are pouring into our waterways every day billions of gallons of untreated sewage and industrial waste, filth that is no respecter of state boundaries, endangering our well-being and robbing ourselves of the full benefits of our rivers, lakes, and streams. In the words of one horrified assemblywoman,
as a housewife, I'd be put in jail if I used the housekeeping methods practiced by cities and towns in our state.
Not long ago, the magazine Sports Afield sent writer Bill Wolfe to scour the country, north, south, east, and west, to examine its rivers, its lakes, its streams, to visit sewage plants, city officials, industrialists, to write down all that he saw, all that he heard.
6 months did Bill Wolfe look, talk, yes, and sniff. And then he wrote. Today we bring you the highlights of that shocking report.
For nearly 60 miles, the Shenandoah River flows toward the Potomac with no dead game fish littering its bank due to pollution. This might seem like an idyllic situation on an industrial stream. But the simple truth is, there are no more game fish to die. They died long ago. The stream is lifeless. The Potomac flows through the nation's capital at Washington, D.C. It's a major source of recreation for the millions who live in the Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington area. Towns and cities and streams in the Potomac Basin daily discharge 20 million gallons of untreated sewage into the waters. In a state farther south, I found gross pollution in the very places that should avoid it, the resort cities. I talked to an official.
We've had to condemn about 140,000 acres of shellfish beds.
How much does that cost the state?
Millions of dollars a year.
Yet two counties pushed local bills through the last legislature that said, in effect,
indiscriminate dumping of all industrial or municipal wastes will be allowed in our counties without restriction.
The industrial East is the land of the human sardine. Here, above all other places, human beings live in their own filth. They practically wallow in it. The Hudson River is one of the prettiest rivers in the East, with its rock cliffs and impressive hills. It is polluted for almost its entire length. When the Delaware is joined by the equally filthy Schuylkill, the Delaware becomes something that must be seen and smelled to be believed. The New England states are enough to cause anyone who loves the land and its waters to weep. The Merrimack would be a wonderful river for canoe trips, but they aren't very practical at present. In spots, the lovely stream stinks too much. And in a great eastern harbor, for every 100 gallons of clean water that empties each day into the inner harbor, there is 1 gallon of raw, untreated sewage. As one interstate sanitation commissioner put it,
you know what that means? Just imagine drawing a bathtub of clean water, but before stepping into it, pour into the tub 1.5 bottles of sewage.
As the Detroit River leaves Lake St. Clair, it is a beautiful pea-green body of water. Soon the green turns to a poisonous color and the river's beauty vanishes. From underwater and open sewers, sewage and industrial waste pour into the once clear stream. By the time the Detroit reaches Gibraltar, it is a vile thing. All but the toughest fish shun it on the American side. Ducks, which should shun it, don't, and sometimes die by the thousands. In the Missouri and the upper Missouri basins, everybody seemed rather surprised to see me.
Stream pollution here? In the nation's breadbasket? You're a daffy man.
Daffy? Oh, no, no, no. I've seen the slaughterhouses, the meat processing and packing plants, the breweries and distilleries, beet sugar refineries, dairy product plants.
But surely out here in the country, there's no pollution out here.
Oh, no. Oh, no. What about silt? Silt from soil erosion. No stream can withstand a barrage of silt poured into it from bare, eroded land along its entire course. The silt covers the beds of spawning fish, burying the eggs. It even kills the young and often adult fish. Why, your pollution problem runs right past your eyes every time a rain raises a river. On the lower Mississippi, they told me this story.
I used to captain a ferry boat on the Scioto River in Ohio. One day, so many fish died in the polluted waters that when I gave the order to shove off, engines! What's wrong? Try again. Yes, mate?
It's no use. Those dead fish are so many the propellers can't turn in that rotting, stinking mess. We'll have to shove off from the wharf with poles.
Do you wonder why I wound up by naming the Mississippi
the Big Sewer
and the Ohio
the Big Gutter?
Finally, I reached the end of the 6 months' trail, the Far West. And in Sports of Field, the magazine that printed my stuff, this is what I wrote. You would think that water would be handled here as a precious thing that it is, since as a rule it must be used over and over. It floats the logs, it runs the mills, it turns the turbines, it washes the ores, it waters the land, it pours from the faucets in homes. It supports important fish life. It floats the cargo-bearing ships. However, less is being done in some states here to keep the streams reasonably clean than in other areas where fresh water is more abundant.
This, then, is the state of our waters in living 1949, in the land of the free and the home of the brave. Today,
the only places where water pollution does not exist at all are places which have no water at all, or where Americans do not live and work.
Truly a damning indictment. The answer?
The only solution to the restoration of all our streams to their original condition would be to close up our industries and abandon our cities and turn the land back to the Indians.
And of course, nobody wants that. Perhaps least of all the Indians, when they stop to consider the condition of the land we'd return to them. What then? This.
Between pristine purity for every waterway and the unforgivable extreme of gross pollution, there is a happy medium. That's what we ought to aim for.
Can it be done? This time the answer is, by community after community, by industry after industry, it is being done. Which means your community, your industries, in all probability, can do it too. For according to Surgeon General Leonard A. Sheely of the U.S. Public Health Service,
at the present time, there is sufficient knowledge and development to deal with about 60% of the polluting wastes.
And scientific research is daily hard at work to find more ways. Let us show you how some states, aware of the danger, and some industries, cognizant of the seriousness of the problem, have fought and are winning the good fight.
Typical of the states that are solving their sewage disposal problems, Rhode Island.
It all started with a shell fisherman's natural resentment when told,
sorry, there'll be no shell fishing in this part of Narragansett Bay.
But listen, I make my livelihood fishing these waters.
No, sorry. The water's polluted. No fishing.
In vain did the shell fisherman protest, but he couldn't, as he put it to a newspaper man friend.
I couldn't protest the facts. The waters are polluted.
Too bad, Ernie.
Not only for me, I understand. Lots of people around the bay live on the tourists. Well, the beaches are closed. That's too bad for you. You can't go swimming there this year.
Hey, I always
do. Not this year, brother.
It doesn't take long for others to see that they're on the hook just as much as the oyster and clam fisheries. The Providence Journal takes up the fight.
Give it the works, boys. Editorials, cartoons, plenty of news space.
A nonpartisan committee is formed.
Our object will be to obtain passage of anti-pollution laws with teeth in them.
The committee wastes no time.
Look, Senator, I'll put it to you bluntly. The people want these anti-pollution laws. We're determined to vote every man out of office who doesn't get behind our drive to clean up.
Well, I'm sure you can count upon my support.
In the next session, the legislature passes five stiff anti-pollution bills. Next step, to get the voters to okay a $5 million referendum to get funds for the measures. The vote, 15-1, in favor of putting the state's money to work against pollution. And the money is already being spent for treatment plans for municipal sewage, sewage that in many places was dumped raw. Now, a year later, it can proudly be said,
every town and city in Rhode Island is part of the big pollution cleanup and will have adequate sewage treatment soon.
Mm-hmm.
Today, states, municipalities, and interstate agencies can find encouragement and some help from the federal anti-pollution law passed at the close of the last session of the last Congress. A bill calling for
encouragement of uniform state anti-pollution laws and compacts between states. Loans to a limit of $250,000 each. Establishment of a laboratory for pollution study.
Helpful as this little is, in the last analysis, it's up to each individual state, each separate community, and yes, each private industry, to look to its own sty if it would fight pollution most successfully and quickly. Nor has all industry been sitting on its hands. An industrial committee has been formed to cope with the situation, and some industries have actually long since solved their particular pollution problem and have made money at it at the same time. For example,
we used to dump the slops from our distillery into the nearest river. It was not long, however, before we were accused of...
What your plant is doing is dumping the equivalent of the daily sewage from a community of 500,000 people. Now, we demand...
To comply with the state's recommendation that our wastes be rendered harmless first, we hired a young chemist and set him to work on the problem, figuring that it was going to put us to a great deal of extra expense. I'll never forget the day he reported to me.
Listen, how about those grains you've been throwing in the water? Well, my tests show that having absorbed a whole lot of yeast in the distilling process, they have three times the food value for cattle that ordinary grains do.
Testing further, we discovered that still another byproduct...
This one, boss, makes baby chickens grow to broiler size in 2 weeks less time than usual.
We didn't wait long. We rushed through a separate factory to convert the slops into feed. Today, we make $1 million a year in profit on the stuff we formerly dumped into the river.
Other industries, as Collier's Bill Davidson reports, have been quick to catch on.
When we were told the acids we were releasing into the waters were harmful, we went to work and soon discovered we could use that same acid over and over again. It saves us $100 a day.
Our varnishing plant is marketing corn oil from our former waste. Our paper mill made $30,000 last year in royalties on a process we worked out to save paper fiber instead of throwing it away.
And so it goes. But don't forget, not all communities, not all industries are doing what they can to fight pollution. If they were, we wouldn't have a problem. Many communities go on poisoning their citizens. Maybe yours, who knows? Many industries go on fouling beaches and killing fish. What can you do about it? Little you.
In your clubs, in your discussions everywhere, study and make known the facts about pollution where you live. Organize if you can. If not, support other organizations who see the handwriting on the wall and are fighting pollution all the way down the line. Organizations like the Isaac Walton League, the General Federation of Women's Clubs. Write letters where letters are printed to such magazines as Sports Afield. Write them to men who read them and vote, to such authorities as your local and state health officers. And if in your personal crusade you find doubt in your friends' minds, follow the advice of this fighter.
Take the whole crowd to the city sewer outlet and make them look at it and make them smell it.
And one last thought. You and I have given 25 minutes of our time to this problem. Remember the dedicated work of the men who are with it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The sanitation engineers whose skill and industry, despite our carelessness, our indifference, are literally keeping us alive. And so, finally, remember what Bill Wolfe writes.
Water pollution is a crime against society, and it must be erased. Else we can't consider ourselves a civilized race or a healthy one.
And then remember that little you with a whole lot of others makes a big you. And big you can do anything. Because big you is the people.
Living 1949 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC special program staff, under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Lou Haslam writes the scripts. Ben Grauer is your narrator. The music is composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shield. This program is directed by Jack Cuney. To the American Chemical Society, to such magazines as Sports Afield, to writers Bill Davidson and Bill Wolfe, and to the agencies who are fighting the menace of our troubled waters and have helped us to bring it to your attention, our thanks. We invite you to join us again next week for a program anticipating Father's Day titled
No Family Should Be Without One.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.